Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Hot Topics from the Soul with your host, Dr. Valerie N. Parker, businesswoman, author, speaker, and life coach. Dr. Parker is the president of Arise by VMP, which is a speakers bureau and public relations company. She is also the visionary and founder of the Soul of a Woman Foundation that brings awareness to domestic violence and children living in single-parent homes. Hot Topics from the Soul is a virtual lifeline to the community, discussing social and political issues, relationships, finances, motivation, and inspiration. For information regarding products, services, and resources, visit www.fromthesoulofawoman.com. That's www.fromthesoulofawoman.com. Ladies and gentlemen, I now present to you your host, Dr. Valerie Parker.
Good evening and welcome to another Hot Topics from the Soul. I'm your host, Dr. Valerie Parker, and I'm so delighted to be with you this evening. It is the last Tuesday in February. You know, February is the time that we take the opportunity to celebrate Black History Month, but every day we're making history. Every day is Black History Month. Every day we are heirs of the inheritance. I have a special guest with me tonight, J.R. Thicklin. Jay, are you there?
I'm here. So glad to be with you, Dr. Val.
I'm so excited. And, you know, we had a powerful weekend. We were at the speaker training here in Fort Lauderdale, and I tell you, it has been life-changing for many people.
Absolutely. I tell you, what a weekend. What a weekend that truly, I believe, made a difference in the lives of so many, and I think the world is going to be a better place as a result of that.
Yeah, you know, this, as I said, this is Black History Month, and you know, workshops like that, which was headed with Les Brown and Ona Brown, his daughter, the opportunities that we are experiencing in this dispensation that we're in right now, it wasn't always so, Jay. We had much opposition, and there was so much hate and discrimination. You know, my first experience. I was born in South Carolina and I was raised in New York. And I moved down here in 1981. I came down here, was engaged to my husband, and I was like, oh, we coming to Florida, the Sunshine State, and I was like little reluctant to come, you know, fast paced girl from New York. I was a little reluctant. But I was like, okay, I won't have to deal with the snow and all the opposition we had with the subways and the buses and whatnot. And when I came down, it was so beautiful, so nice down here. And I applied for a job. I'll never forget. I was working at Fidelity Federal, and it was which was a bank. And I had no banking experience, but what I did have, I worked for Saks Fifth Avenue for a few years, and I was in charge of the bank check reconciliation department. And so they thought at the bank that it was a good fit for me to learn about loans. And I welcomed the experience because, you know, I'm a good learner, quick learner, and I'm always wanting to expand my borders. And I enjoyed the job. So I was there about 3 months, and during that 3 months, they had an audit. Now, Jay, I was like, okay, I didn't really know what all that was because, like I said, I hadn't had any banking experience, whatever, but I was holding it down, doing my job, and I had gotten many accolades from my supervisor. Like, you know, she couldn't believe that I was able to catch on and do what I was able to do. Well, after they were going through an audit, and what happened was, after the audit was over at the bank, the very next day, my supervisor called me in the office, and she was like, you know, you've been doing such a wonderful job, and, you know, everybody likes you. You have great personality. Your skills are exceptional, but I'm going to have to let you go. And I'm like, you're going to have to let me go? She was like, yes.
Wow.
You know, we had to do an audit, and we had a quota we had to meet. And I said, a quota? she was like, yeah, we have to meet a quota. I said, well, didn't I do my job right? Didn't I help you meet your quota? She was like, well, yeah, but we needed a person of color. And I was like, what? That's
wow.
The first, that was my first experience of racism.
Wow. You felt pissed.
So, yeah, I mean, I just couldn't believe it. You know, New York, we all meshed together, you know, so I was shocked. My mouth flew open, and I said, are you serious? And she was like, yeah, and she said, we'll give you 2 weeks severance pay. That way you'll be able to find a job, and I'll give you a great recommendation. Matter of fact, she handed me a letter with raving reviews so that I could use it to apply for another job. So, you know, we are heirs of the promise, heirs of the inheritance that was left for us by our forefathers, our ancestors that fought so hard for us to be free. But unfortunately, we don't maximize and we're not utilizing the talents and skills that we are afforded in this society that we're living in now. I was out one day, Jay, in the supermarket, and I saw this young mother, and she had looked like a 2-year-old, and the other child must have been about 4, maybe 5. And excuse my French on the air, but she addressed, the child was crying, and she said, she made some racial remarks to the child, you know, called them the N-word. And
wow.
Told the child he was a little bee, was a little boy, said, stop acting like a bee. And
wow.
I just was like, I mean, my mouth flew open. So we are not utilizing and taking advantage of the sacrifices that were made for us in the right and correct way. I know Dr. King would probably roll over if he saw the things that we are doing as a people with that he marched for and ultimately wind up dying for.
You know, I often say the same thing. You know, I talk about the fact of the blood, sweat, the tears, the sacrifice that was made by our forefathers and foremothers and those that came before us, those that I think looked into the very eye of adversity and decided that it was worth the fight. And yet still to see for all of us that have benefited from that, how in many ways that many of us have not carried that torch. We have not carried that same burning desire. We have not embraced those opportunities that have been afforded to us. And so as a result of it, what we see is such a disparity for us inside of the marketplace. We see a disparity inside of so many things. And inside of your situation, here you were doing your work, doing all that, but you got caught up in what they call a quota. They were trying to reach a quota, meant that they had to have the right ratio of minority versus majority. And so, therefore, once they met that quota, they were done. And so, once again, were you judged on the basis of your character, your content, of your knowledge? No. You met the quota as far as ethnicity-wise, and though she gave you the letter because you were smart, because you were efficient, but at that point, that wasn't what their benchmark was. Their benchmark was the fact that they had to have a minority in that position. They did it. They had the audit, and guess what? They probably passed the audit. So once they passed the audit, you know, they can afford now to let you go because they can go back to what they wanted. But even inside of that, you know, quotas could be good and quotas could be bad. You know, we talk about affirmative action. That's a hot button topic because when you hear a lot of people of Caucasian persuasion in time past what we call the whole thing about the quota, what did I just call it? The whole thing that we're talking about in order to make that particular quota with blacks and minorities, they would be very upset because they thought that what was happening is that we were getting these special privileges because of ethnicity. And they rejected the fact that we had undergone over 400 years of slavery. We have been denied access to the process. We have been denied access to jobs and access to voting and so many things. So when we start talking about affirmative action, we had to have those things. That's why it bothers me when I hear even black figures and people that have succeeded begin to downplay affirmative action because, in fact, we needed affirmative action, at least for some period of time in history, in order to somewhat level the playing field. But I think the sad part, though, Dr. Val, is that the playing field being level, and when we in this present generation does not take advantage of it, that just really that has to just turn over the graves of Dr. King and so many others that have fought for this. I mean, people who literally had dogs sicked on them and water hoses and people who were not allowed to sit at a counter, you know, because the counter said for whites only, or people that went through all of that, and now we have this opportunity. And yet it's still, where's that entrepreneurial spirit? Because that's where they birthed. You know, coming out of the 60s and coming out of that era there, black businesses sprung up like crazy. The mom-and-pop stores that was in our communities was something that we loved because, in fact, we saw our own people in our own neighborhood, and here was stores that was being passed down to the next generation. But something happened. Something happened within our community, and it's really a travesty now because when we go in our community, oh, yeah, they're corner stores, but they're not corner stores with people that look like us nor sound like us. It's filled with people that are from the outside. So now the real issue is that how do we grab hold of that again? Because that was our legacy. That was our inheritance.
Wow.
That was what our parents went through blood, sweat, and tears about, Dr. Val. And you think about it, our parents and our foreparents, many of them did not have education, did not have formal academic education, but they did all they could to make sure that we were positioned to have what they didn't have. And I think that's where the problem is in today's society, because somehow or another, we have a whole generation or two that refused to pay it forward. They didn't pay it forward. And because they did, we're seeing the disparities that we're seeing. We're seeing what appears to be a bunch of lazy black people, but I don't believe that. I don't believe that black people inherently are not lazy people. Inherently, we were the workers. We were the ones that built America. So there's got to be something seriously wrong about this present generation that seems to be all right with just looking for the system to do something for them rather than doing it for themselves. And so we have to take examples, you know, and we have to do those things, you know, to make sure that we keep the entrepreneurial spirit going. And you start off, you referenced this weekend, and what a beautiful sight that was, seeing Les Brown and his daughter Ona and his son, them continuing, if you would, the business. They're staying in that line
right.
of business, and that line of business is opening up doors for so many. It's bringing hope and inspiration across the world. And that's what I'm saying. The real legacy that we leave is not going to be found in a pair. Is not going to be found on you know, sitting on a pair of 22s or Sprewells. It's not going to be found with the bling and ching around our neck. But it's going to be found within the substance that we're able to transfer from one generation to the other. And that's what I think that we're guilty of. I think that somehow or another we've traded in substance for symbols. And the symbols of what we think is success versus the substance. Because the substance is the only thing that can be reproduced. We can't reproduce symbols.
We're going to open up the line shortly, Jay, because I want to hear from our listeners. Open platform, you know, one of the things I try and do at Hot Topics from the Soul is hear from our people, hear what people are thinking and offer some solutions. And, you know, we're heirs of the inheritance. We've inherited the right to be free. But what are we doing with the freedom? That's a question that I am opening up to the minds for those that would like to join the conversation. Press 1, and I will chime you in. What are we doing as heirs of freedom? One thing Cicely Tyson said, you know, she's always playing in historically black movies and playing an icon and a person of substance. And one of the things she said, she was asked the question, she said, what would you say about this generation we're living in now? And she said that she feels that we have given our generation too much because we've left them nothing to fight for.
Wow.
How profound.
Wow.
We've given them so much, and we've given our children so much that there's nothing left for them to fight for. They do not respect the sacrifices that were made. When I hear rap artists arguing with icons, like I heard that Jay-Z said something out of order to Harry Belafonte, who's a civil rights activist, you know, had the audacity to kind of get in his chest. And I was just embarrassed about the whole situation. I dare you not only, you know, open your mouth, but, you know, we've lost respect for our seniors.
Absolutely.
We've lost the respect for our senior citizens because, you know, for you to just say, you know, come out of your face and say something out of order regarding somebody who's iconic in that nature, who has done so much for our community. And, you know, I just was embarrassed about the whole situation. And if I could have gotten on a plane and went up there and knocked on his door and they'd see me, I would probably punch them in his face.
Because, and absolutely. You know, I think you had a whole line of people behind you ready to punch him as well because I think you're on the head. How dare we insult the sacrifice and the courage of those that came before, the Harry Belafontes who crossed a lot of racial lines and things in order for us to have a voice, who despite others that might say, well, he was a fine, fair-skinned African-American, so he got special privilege. No, he refused to rest upon those type of things. He understood that until we all had equal access and opportunity, that then none of us have won, and was willing to put himself on the line for it and did so. And could you imagine the unmitigated gall of anyone of this present day to put their mouths on someone who have stood and the only reason that why these individuals are where they are is because of the Harry Belafontes and those of that day who had the courage to stand. That's almost like a slap in the face.
Absolutely. And that's how I felt. I dare you. So, you know, what are we doing as a people? You know, another thing, Jay, that gets me is when there's election time.
Yes.
Now, people were killed, stomped, beaten, burned, hosed for trying to go to vote. And here
Absolutely.
We are saying, I'm not voting. I don't like them anyway. My vote doesn't matter. They're going to put whoever they want to put in there anyway, so why bother? Evil prevails when we do nothing.
Absolutely. And that is sheer ignorance. That is ignorance on parade when we make those type of comments as if, oh, my vote doesn't count. Well, I'm not going there. They're going to do what they want to do anyway. I mean, could you imagine the people who died in the bloody Selma March? I mean, those people that was beaten to the inch of their lives, and not to mention that, not only the ones that was beaten to the inch of their lives, I mean, with Jimmie Lee Jackson there in Marion, Alabama, who was killed. They were having a peaceful protest because of those unjust practices. And this young black man outside of Selma in the little small town, Marion, Alabama, same town that Coretta Scott King is born and raised in, was killed. And that brought attention to the whole march from Selma to Montgomery. And there they were. Could you imagine? You're simply marching. Well, hold up. They marched because they understood the power of their voice and that they needed to be heard. And to have the state troopers and to have those individuals who were supposed to be enforcing law waiting at the foot of the bridge, and they're waiting there with billy club, tear gas, shields, and on horses and all that, and they begin to beat them back. Many of those individuals were trampled. Many of them were beaten with billy club, bloodied and things, and then we have the audacity to talk about, I'm not going to vote. And even once they made the march, people like the Reverend Reed, who was not a black man, but a preacher who came from Boston, who was killed there in that city, Viola Luiso, who was killed there in helping people on that march from Selma to Montgomery, and others who lost their lives. And we really will take the luxury and make up the excuse that I'm not going to vote because my vote don't count anyway. Really? Well, guess
right.
what? If those individuals whose lives were given and taken as a result of for us to have this voter right, what if they just decide, you know, hey, I'm not going to march, I'm not going to do these things because it won't matter anyway. We got to recapture that fight, the spirit, and understand the benefit of that legacy. And I think you're exactly right.
Thank you so much. And we have a caller, 7906. You're live.
Hi, it's Courtney Thomas from Los Angeles. Dr. Parker, how are you?
Hi, thank you so much for calling from L.A.
Yes, yes, yes. I have a comment I'd like to say, and I think it's twofold. Our history is watered down in school, and then we don't teach it at home. So
wow.
We breathe off of the air that's fed to us. We don't know. We don't know. That's number one. Number two, I can't remember what he said, but he said something about some what did he say, symbols and something
substance,
else.
Yeah. Yes, because the fact, yeah, we are looking for what we consider symbols of success, the symbols that we made it, but we're not perpetuating the substance, and the substance is those things. It is the workmanship, it is the commitment, it's the dedication, it's understanding the benefit of things like entrepreneurship, and understanding the fact that people, historically, black people have never been lazy people. We built this country. That was the drive. Our foreparents had so much pride. Before they wanted you to give them something, they would work for it. And that was their mentality. And for us now to be living in an era where people now turn black people as lazy, and we see, I mean, unfortunately, too many are making that a true prediction, it's a sad thing. Because now I'd rather have the symbols of success rather than the substance. But see, I can't give my children symbols and say, look here, perpetuate the symbols throughout. I've got to give them substance because only substance can reproduce itself.
Well, no disrespect to you, Dad, but I'm sure you're boring as opposed to your friend's kids, your kids' friends. So they are, this symbolicism, if you will, is being reiterated every week with these TV programs that are not our reality, but they're imposing them as if they are our reality. And I think that's the thing. We're up against a lot. I remember when rap music first came out, my daughter's listening to this stuff, and they're saying B's and H's. And I told my daughter, I said, well, they're talking about you too. And she said, no, they're not. I said, yeah, you too. So at some point, I think that we have to, I refuse to watch that stuff because that's not my reality. And I don't want to perpetuate it as it being my reality. And I think the only way that anyone understands anything is through their pocket, especially the powers that be. We did it before with the Montgomery bus, and we can
Absolutely.
Do it again with the reality TV programs. We need to stop watching that stuff. We really do.
Yeah, you bring up a very great point there, and it's interesting because when you begin to bring up the Montgomery bus, the boycott of the Montgomery bus system, it was an interesting thing. And this is where I think our difficulty is a little different today than it was then, because at that time we looked at structural barriers. These are things that are structured within our law, within our system. So these became barriers to us being able to do things. We had to fight to turn and change things around. Our problem now, what we're dealing with, is that so many of us seemingly have benefited, if you would, from what we're now calling freedom. Well, the freedom of expression. We have the right to express ourselves this way, and rappers will tell you that. There's no, if we mention the word censorship, then guess what? We're denying people their First Amendment rights. And so it's kind of like this. I tie it into something that I think is so fitting. There's a scripture in the good book that says, brethren, you have been called into liberty, but let not your liberty become an occasion to the flesh. And that's what I see happening, that now we can take the word freedom and so we can put it in front of anything, and then we can justify being able to do anything, whether it is vulgarity, whether it is any type of music. You know, we're just looking at the history of music over the last 40 or 50 years. That was a time, just even in the 80s, even in the 70s, I will never forget when it was Casey, I believe, in Sunshine Band came out with the song Shake Your Booty. I remember when the word booty was controversial.
That's
you could
right.
have booty on a record. It raised eyebrows. Oh, no. Well, we can only play it after 12 or after 6 p.m. Look
oh,
where
I remember
today.
When you couldn't. I
yeah.
remember when you couldn't even curse on national television and stuff.
Absolutely.
And now they even have it on the kids' programs where it's okay to say hell or damn on kids' programming. So
Absolutely.
I definitely concur with that.
And unfortunately, we don't know what the forefathers meant with the First Amendment. So we can interpret it any way that we want to. However, I don't think they saw this coming. I really don't.
No.
Because I think that had they seen it coming, it would have been written differently because the whole world has changed based off of this stuff. And I think it's poison, personally. I think that Beyonce is a very talented person. However, I am really sorry that the president invited her into the White House because you see one side of her, if you will, a 9 to 5, and then you see a 5:05 to midnight, and the kids are seeing both, and they don't know how to differentiate. One is entertainment and work, if you will, and the other is respectful. They don't know how to. If Dr. Parker, if you asked your granddaughter, she couldn't tell you that.
Right, exactly.
Unfortunately, because of that, I think you made a very good point. You know, when our young people see this, they look at the fact that she was invited by the president, that that's an endorsement. And it's almost like a full claim endorsement of everything. Well, I'm telling you, as talented as she is, and I think that's where our danger go. We've always been talented people. But I think, and going back to your earlier statement about we don't know what the forefathers meant, I think this is what we can really, really err on the side of. They were really hoping that common sense would kick in, that common sense would help govern us inside of these things. They couldn't have thought for one moment that we would go so far to the other side of the pendulum and swing so far
right. That
literally that our lives are self-destructive, that our lives have totally broken down any type of sense of respect toward one another. And so now we're forced with this whole dichotomy over the last goodness gracious, 150 years, where now we're trying to define where does your freedom end and where does mine begin? So where does your freedom
Absolutely.
End, where does mine begin? You know, do I have a right to play loud music right up in your door? Do I have a right to be outside of your house and be loud? And I say, well, this is a public street, and you can't tell me I can't play my music loud? You know, these are things that we're now, because those things should have been handled by simply common sense.
But you
the right common sense into the law.
So the argument is, what's more important to those who really have no common sense, using something that they don't have or making money that they never had? And money will win every time.
And it goes to the value. See, because the value system have changed. And unfortunately, common sense is not so common anymore. And so
it's not
a disappearing act. It is something that is so far gone that literally we see it in behaviors. We see it perpetuated from one generation to the other. And I have to share this because I think you'll find it's interesting. I went out right after my son spoke on Sunday at a Black History program. And he and I go out to eat. And we're there eating at a restaurant. And while we're there, I see a young lady there and her family, two young black ladies and another person that was with them, and she had a little 3-year-old boy, looks to be no more than 3. Well, I noticed the whole time where the little boy was just all over the place, and she really did not do anything to get him to sit down, but here were people coming in there to eat. The little boy was just all over the place, and then the little boy turned over a cup of the people who were sitting a table over from them, literally baptized the lady there. I mean, totally. I mean, because when he was so active that when he hit the cup went up in the air and just totally baptized her. That's the term I use.
Wow.
Well, what was more amazing was everybody is gasping, and the restaurant staff came and got the mop, was that the mother never, ever turned to the lady and said, "Ma'am, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. Is there anything I can do?" The mother never looked at the woman who was baptized by her son, but rather said to the 3-year-old, "Sit your little self down. I'm telling you, boy, stop being so bad." Never had a conversation with
her.
Wow. Never said, "I'm sorry." And sat there for another 7 minutes before she left, and then took off and left, and I'm looking at the woman's face. She's shaking her head. She's going, "This is unbelievable." And I took the liberty to speak to her. I said, "I'm so sorry, ma'am. I'm so sorry that you got a baptism and everything." She said, "No." She said, "Listen, it's because of the first baptism I got years ago that I did not go off on her." But once again, here's another generation that will not even teach common courtesy. Common courtesy. What a teachable moment for that 3-year-old boy. What a teachable moment to even get him to understand that his actions were wrong. The mother never once apologized. And so those are common sense things, and it's common sense thing that we've been seeing these things happen over the years. And, you know, we're down in South Florida here, and I'll never forget what his name, Luke Skywalker, years ago, Two Live Crew, when I began to see a lot of this stuff come on, when we started seeing nudity on the stage, and that's when our black girls began to be part of these videos, and he came out with this album, As Nasty As You Want to Be. I'll never forget, and many people opposed that. And what did he use as his argument? That you cannot censor us. You are violating our freedoms. And yet it's still, I heard
yeah,
that same gentleman.
Yeah, but what made it so bad, what made it bad, Jay, was the fact that we sat back and did nothing and actually joined
That's
in the
right.
party and said, let him do what he wants to do. It's okay. You can't stop us from doing what we want to do. I have a caller holding, 5721, you're live. 5721, you're live.
They didn't recognize that's the last four digits of their phone number.
217-2175, you're live.
Perhaps
okay,
they're muted.
2175, if, you know, they're live. I guess
yes,
they want to continue.
Yes, I'm here. I'm right here.
Okay.
Hello.
All right, we need you to speak. Go ahead.
All right. Thank you so much. I sure do appreciate this because this is a very, very good conversation. And if I had probably had this conversation before a lot of things happened to me and my son, it probably would have been much, much better today. But in the voting area of what you all was talking about, there is a lot of people now can vote, and they don't think that they can vote. But President Obama, when he first got in, he said that if they have not gotten into trouble within a year and they was off probation or parole or anything like that, then they would be able to vote as long as they as long as they don't get into trouble within that year. So a lot of people can vote and just don't know that they can vote. So that's why we have to get out there and help the people and tell them, you know, that it's okay. It's okay the way you feel. It's all right the way you feel. But just let me, you know, help you with this part as to where that if you will vote, this is what will happen for us. Because a lot of times we just think that, oh, you know, I just can't do this or I can't do that. And a lot of people do think that way because they have been in trouble just about all their life. And then a lot of people have gotten killed. In just about every family there is, a young child has gotten killed. So, you know, and you know, like my son, I haven't found out today, you know, who killed him. And he was 16 years old.
Wow, so
that was the only child I had. So, you know,
wow.
with these types of things
that
are in our life. Huh?
You said you just found out?
You said they haven't found out yet.
They haven't. They never did.
Okay.
They haven't. And that happened since 1991. And
wow.
And all of his friends was with him. So it's, you know, and when you look at, you know, these type of things that's into our life, you know, and it gives a lot of people as to where a don't care thing, you know. And with that don't care And with that don't care thing, you know, it happens like that, you know. And, you know, you have to look at the way we, you know, a lot of people, you know, went through a whole lot, you know, especially, you know, with our men, you know. And a lot of times we didn't have the men to help us out. And it was pretty hard, you know, on the women, you know. So we have to look at, you know, every point and every, you know, prospect as to where – that what are we going through and what's going on, you know?
You know,
one of the points that you made that I was very glad that you made was the fact that there's a lot of individuals that have criminal records or have been arrested for even minor things, so they've been under the assumption that they can't vote. And they've been told by people of, you know, that you can't vote because you have a record. You can't get a job because you have a record. And that's not true. In many cases, you can go ahead and vote, but that's how the system wants us to do. It constantly blocks us out from making decisions. And as I said earlier, evil prevails when we do nothing, when we don't fight for the right that was already given to us and sit back and do nothing but complain. That's what happens. We miss out, and then we have people in office that we can't even that we can't address or say anything to because we help them get in there.
You know, so many of those things that you guys are in are so accurate and so on point. And here's the thing that's happened. And we saw a resurgence in 2008 when Obama was first reelected. We saw voting numbers come out in an incredible fashion. Incredible. Now, what did we see happen in 2012? Because those numbers were so greater, we registered more black voters than ever. We registered more young voters since the Voting Rights Act was signed. But what happened as a result of that, and we saw the powers in voting, you had states looking to do everything to prevent people from voting. That is the reason why, even in the state of Florida, I almost hate to say it, we always end up being the most controversial state. Why? Because we had a governor that basically made it almost, set the roadblock so that people could not vote. They got rid of early voting in the manner in which they had in 2008. They got rid of the go-to-Sunday vote because they understood that people of color, I mean, pastors for the first time in many years was acting like they were civil rights leaders. They made sure that their members went out and they voted. And so they took away those things, and the barriers began to come up. And so the barriers such as limiting the days, reducing the days, and thinking that would really discourage people. But one thing I have to say that was so outstanding was that even in the midst of it all, our people that stood in line, they stood there until they voted. It didn't matter that they were there 3, 4, and 5 hours. They did so. But the real question is, why should those type of things and nuances be in place? Or why are they put there? They are there to set us back, to discourage, so that we can produce those same type of attitude. Well, my vote don't count. I'm not going to go through all that. It doesn't matter. And you got a whole group because, yes, you're right, caller. That is one of the things President Obama put out there immediately. But the problem is that it's state by state because the states want to control that part of it. So we have even here, we constantly do, I've worked on projects where we're trying to restore rights of voters because they don't know that they can vote. They've been scared to death, told that they cannot. Their votes are not automatically restored. And once again, in the state of Florida, a very poor state when it comes to this, is that they do not automatically restore those individuals' right to vote. So whether they've finished their term and done all those things, if they do not stay on top of it, guess what? They are not. Those rights are not automatically restored to them as they should be. And so, therefore, you take out a whole large part of the population not voting, and we just have to continue to we have to educate, and we must get the word out.
Well, one of the things that I want to say, too, is, you know, we talk about the things that were taken away, like the people voting on Sunday and buses being hauled down for people to come in. Why do we need those things in place anyway? We should be willing and wanting and making the sacrifices to go out and do it without people pulling and dragging us.
Well, I totally agree with you, but one of the things I did see as a barrier, because the difference between the 2008 election and 2012 was simply this, is that when I went to the 2012 election to try to vote early, what was interesting, they did not have very many polling booths there at all. So the whole thing was you had these lines that were so incredibly long. And I believe those lines discouraged a lot of people. They got out of line.
Well, I worked the polls, and I'll tell you what the problem was. It wasn't the fact that they didn't have enough workers or polls open. The thing was they only had one machine one machine for the regular voting and one for disabled in large precincts when they should have had two. Now it's set up where each precinct is going to have two of each machine, whether it's a small precinct or not, because President Obama said, okay, we're not going to go through this again. We're not going to say which one has this amount of people and which one has that amount of people. We're going to make sure there's sufficient voting equipment in every location.
And once again, it will be up to those supervisors of elections to enforce that. And unfortunately, I have to say, particularly Palm Beach County, who was the culprit in the 2000 election, who effectively got received the name of Palm Beach Recounty, because the whole recounting thing continuously have problems where there are inadequate voting machines and those type of things that are in place. And people take that type of news as a discouragement not to go and vote. And that's what we have to eliminate every excuse. And one of the reasons I say eliminate every excuse, because there's no reason why we should have inadequate or insufficient number of voting booths or voting machines that are working, because the fact when people need to vote, they ought to vote. And I agree with you, the disabled, the elderly, I know where I went to vote, there are quite a few elderly people in that community, quite a few. You know, and elderly people, a lot of them use absentee ballots and things. And in this case here, many of them didn't. In the 2008 election, many of them just simply wanted to be a part of what they believe would be history, and it was. They wanted to cast that vote. And I know for myself, in 2008, one of the first things that happened was after President Obama was announced as the winner, I went to the bedside of my father, who was blind, and I said to him, "Dad, we did it." And he said, "What did we do?" I said, "We have elected our first black president." And he started laughing and said, "We did." It was one of the most memorable moments of my entire adult life. Because the fact, and especially me being born and raised in Selma, Alabama, this was just something that just touched me in a tremendous way. And it's one of those things that I continue to say, we have to understand the power of our voice, and the power of our voice is oftentimes tied to our vote.
Courtney, there in L.A., have you had the same experiences that we have during the voting process?
I don't recall us having that problem, because we generally have several machines at each polling place.
Right. See, I think because Florida is one of the main states they use to push the elections over a lot of times, that they purposely put things in place to make sure that the Republicans win. But, you know, back with what Cicely Tyson was saying, that we have given this generation so much, standing in line for 1 or 2 hours to vote when people walk 5 and 10 miles to press a button to be able to write their name on a paper, to cast their vote of who they want or felt should have been in office. But yet we're so uppity and so, bougie,
entitled,
that we think we're too good to stand up in a line for an hour and two and complain about, "Oh, I'm hungry, oh, it's too hot, oh, this, oh, that," when people die to be able to write their name on a voting document.
Well, you know, Dr. Parker, they'll stand in line 2 hours to buy a tennis shoe, though. See, we, again,
absolutely,
it goes back to what
and
you
an
said.
iPhone.
It's our values. But it comes
absolutely
from home. It comes from home.
I think Cicely
yeah,
Tyson
we'll
put
spend
it so
all
well.
This time, we would spend a lot of time in line to buy an iPhone or whatever the next big thing is, even buy tickets to see some of these stars, these entertainers. We will spend the night camped out to do that, but will not stand in line for our future. And then we sit back and complain about what's not being done and why did that person get ahead. And you know, I went down to City Hall to try and get this and that, and they wouldn't give me respect. They wouldn't see me. They wouldn't call me back. Why? Well, because you didn't participate in what you should have participated in so that you could get the proper response. We've got to know who's in our community, and we should not just look to vote just when it's a presidential election. We should go every time there's something to vote for in our community. The mayors, the commissioners and stuff, they're the one that set the precedent in our area where they know where the dollars go into our communities. So we need to make sure that those dollars that has been allotted from the Capitol are used to benefit us. And we cannot do that if we do not vote in our local elections as well as the presidentials.
You're exactly right, because when we think about even the people who run our individual states, the senators and the state-level senators and Congress persons such as that, when we fail to vote in those midterm elections and those local elections, what we're doing, we don't recognize that we are definitely altering the
enabling
whole power process, and because the fact these are the ones who are taking that voice to Washington, and as you said, you know, it's a value issue, you know, because people will stand. I mean, how many times we see it? Think about Black Friday, and although, you know, so many stores are now trying to do everything to capture that dollar the day after Thanksgiving. But I can tell you, for many people, they camped outside of these stores waiting on the sale. Some of them camped out a whole day and a half beforehand, and they was willing to do so.
They lost their life in the process because they got stopped and trampled on.
Exactly. And here it is. We won't understand the fact that, as you were just saying, Dr. Val, you know, people walk further than that. The distance between Selma and Montgomery is 50 miles. People made a 50-mile pilgrimage in order for us to have the right to vote, and it enacted the Voting Rights Act, and had not we had that, I mean, forget it. The rest would be history. It wouldn't be an Obama. It wouldn't have been so many of opportunities. But once again, I think I'm so glad that you quoted that. Cicely Tyson, that quote there, I'm going to just imprint it in my mind because I think she's right on it, that we have given this generation too much. And they have nothing to fight for anymore. They don't. That's why they can't embrace the struggle. They don't appreciate the struggle because they were the benefits of the struggle, and they have a silver spoon and don't even realize it. But they're taking the spoon and they're making it some type of ugly, jagged-edged pitchfork because they won't continue to struggle, and we won't continue to fight and stand for the things that we believe in. And as a result, we're seeing what is happening in our society today, I believe.
Absolutely. But what are some of the things that we can do to change some of what's going on right now, Courtney, that you see?
Well, we need leaders. We need leaders. And there's fighters all across this country. So if Reverend Al is considered a leader, he can't be everywhere. But I get the impression even that he's not. And I don't know. It's just an observation. He's not, and no one is being trained on. We had pride in one day. And I don't know. Other than it starting at home, I don't know the answers. Like he just said, Mr. J just said a second ago, 50 miles between Montgomery and Selma. I didn't know that.
Absolutely.
So that's important, 50 miles, because if you let our education system teach it, they'll say 48 miles or 45 miles to minimize it or you know, make it seem as if it's not important, and it is important.
It is so important, and when you think about that, you know, growing up in that small city, and every time we would have to drive to Montgomery, to the Capitol there, the memory of the march always stood out with me because the only thing I could think about is, my goodness, they came this far. It was far in the car. Let's slow people talk about walking it over a period of time. And I think that is so important. And I think you were just saying, you know, leaders like, you know, Reverend Al Sharpton. But I think that we're in another place. I think we're in another place in this day and time. And I think Dr. King was such a visionary. I think he saw it. And when I say that, one of the things, because we always quote so much stuff that Dr. King says, but one of the things he said, and I'm going to try to paraphrase it best I can. I remember this, and this is not recorded in one of his most famous speech, but he did say something to the tune. He said, we must rapidly begin to shift from a thing-oriented society to a person-oriented society where machines and companies' profit motives and property rights are considered more important than people. The giant triplets of racism, materialism, and militarism are incapable of being conquered. And I think that's what's happened, that we've lost that personal touch. We've lost that. It used to be we're our brother's keeper. We was in this for, you know, our parents saw the people behind them. They wanted us to have a better life than they did. And somewhere along the line, that is not continuing to happen. And I think that leadership with Dr. King, you know, when you read his history, he never volunteered to be, you know, who he became, he was actually given that slot there with the Montgomery Boy, you know, which he started because the fact the other preachers was arguing amongst themselves and he was a new blood, and they gave it to him. But what I'm saying, he was not looking for fame. He was looking for change. And I think that's the difference in today's leader society. I think that we get intoxicated with fame. We get intoxicated with notoriety, and it becomes about us rather than about our people at large. People like Dr. King did not get intoxicated with the fame because their goal was to see the change happen in our society. And if we can ever get leaders that could stand long enough to be agents of change and not looking to be agents of fame, we will see things change in our society. And I believe those leaders are in our homes. I believe they must be in our churches. I believe they must be in our schoolhouses. They must be in our. They must be in those places there. They must rise from there, and we have to bring the education back. We're not having this conversation enough.
Well, you know, another thing, I think that we've become so desensitized. You think about the difference in a year. Think about the difference in a year. When Trayvon Martin, when that thing first took place, this country was, we were roaring. Everyone was upset. A year, in a year's time, the little baby, what's his name, Jordan, in a year's time, we become so desensitized and accept just about everything.
We accept anything.
We accept anything. Just in a year's time, what's the difference? What's the difference? It's
well,
become
you know what?
As
we're reactionary. We're reactionary, and here's my take on that. I think this is what my take is on that. We must begin to value our lives completely across the board, because I think what our criminal justice system is saying to us as people of color is that they laugh in our face, because the system is crooked. It is broken. But I think we must first fix it when it comes to the crimes that we commit against each other. And if we could show that we value our own lives, when Pookie kills Ray Ray, or when Pookie unjustly killed, Ron Ron, you know what happens? You made mention of it earlier. Just like the caller who called us said her son was killed and he was amongst his friends. You know what happened? Everybody goes, I don't want to snitch. I don't want to tell. I'm not going to tell. And we go silent. But we want a public outcry when that happens from someone of another ethnicity. Why does the value of our lives increase when our lives have been unjustly affected by a person of another ethnicity? Should we not hold one another accountable and say, listen here, Ray-Ray, and Ray-Ray is somebody's son, just like your son is somebody's son? I mean, our value of life has to start with us. We have to value who we are as a people and not start having this disposable mentality. Well, that's why it's so easy to use the N-word. I don't care nothing about that. I don't care. I don't give a thing about that. Who you think you are? Because there's a sense of not valuing one another. But the moment, see, I dare not give George Zimmerman the glory. I dare not give him the satisfaction of being some type of vigilante of some sort, because I got a problem with that. I'm not going to give him that type of glory. What he did is a product of our system that continues to have that type of problem, but we have a larger problem, and the larger problem is that we're killing each other. And we don't give a care about it. It continues to happen. Mothers are burying their sons and their daughters every week. They're buying black dresses, and they're doing this every week. And guess what? It's just another page on the headlines of the news. And guess what? We won't march for that.
Because we're killing each other. And one of the other things we do is we buy into all the hype. Just like there was a circulation going around during Black History Month with Dr. King with gold teeth and chains. We talked about it. We looked it up. We Googled it. We forwarded it. I never saw it because I refused to participate. And that's what it was.
Neither did I.
All caught up in stuff in that and buy the shirts and think it's cute for little Johnny to put on. And meanwhile, little Johnny has no idea who Dr. King is in the first place. So that T-shirt he's wearing it all with his chest stuck out because he got on a shirt with a man with gold teeth and chains on. It begins with us. We have lowered our standards. We have lowered our standards, and it begins with us. And I implore all of you that are listening today, it is time for us to participate in our own rescue. We are our brother's keepers. We got to get involved. We got to be nosy and not just want to march and rally when somebody down the street loses a child that you know. We got to participate with people we don't know. No, this is not right, and we're not going to stand for it because that young man could be our young man and our young daughters. And we have got to do better at parenting because these little murderers and robbers and thieves we got and these molesters we have, they did not just show up on the planet. They weren't dropped down from outer space. We gave birth to them. They were born onto this planet. They didn't just drop down. They weren't beamed down. But it came from somewhere. We are the heirs to the inheritance, and what are we doing with the inheritance that we were given?
You know, Val, you hit it on the head. You hit it on the head. One of the things that I think is so important, you know, Sir Winston Churchill said something that is so important. He said, we teach what we know, but we reproduce what we are. Mm-hmm. And that's what we have to understand, is that we're reproducing what we are. And somewhere along the line, we have to make up our mind that we refuse to be that again, because that is not what we came out of. That is not what we came from. We came from strong ancestry. We came from people who was determined. We came from people who refused to just give in. But here's our problem. I think our problem is the very freedom that we got. Because you know what? We've already proven we can go through adversity. Black people have gone through adversity all along. That's why when you look at Abraham Lincoln, you say what you want to. He had an understanding of black folks. He had slaves, and so he understood that. Because he said nearly all men, he was talking about us when he said this, nearly all men can stand adversity. But if you want to test a man's character, give him power.
Give him power. Wow.
You want to test his character, give him power, because power will determine really who he is.
Ooh.
We got power, and we're destroying one another. We got power, and we're taking out our own folks. That's our problem.
You know, I was watching, this is Courtney again, I was watching Oprah Winfrey's life class yesterday. It was about single mothers, and Tyler Perry was on there, and he said that our lives are like a string. If you keep pulling that string, you'll get to the root of where the problem is. And that really
Absolutely.
Is the truth.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
But it comes from the, it starts at home. It really does. It starts at home.
It really
it starts
does.
At, turn off the television. Sit down. Let's read a book. Let's have dinner together. Let's pray together. We don't do those things. Those are the values that we were taught coming up. We don't do those things anymore.
And
we're buying the token gifts. Here, baby, here's your iPad. Sit down while Mama's on the telephone. I mean, you think about it.
Absolutely.
I know when you're driving down the street, you see mothers on the phone, and their kids are just sitting in the car. No communication, nothing.
No
so
communication.
They're racing, nothing. They watch television, and this is where they're learning. This is
absolutely.
I want to thank you. I want to thank all of you for joining me tonight on another Hot Topics from the Show. Courtney, you're absolutely right, and I thank you so much for your input and wisdom that you've shared on this phone. And, Jay, you know, I thank you for joining in and hosting with me tonight. J.R. Thicklin, we go back about 20-something years. Could you give the listeners your information and your organization? So that people will know how to connect with you, please.
Thanks so much. That's J.R. Thicklin, president and founder of Destiny by Choice. And it can be looked up on the internet, www.destinybychoice.org. That is how you reach us, or you can reach us at manofpurpose2000@gmail.com.
Wow, great. Thank you. And you could also find them on Facebook, too. And I would like to invite all my listening audience to visit my website, www.fromthesoulofawoman.com, and purchase my latest book, Unlimited Possibilities. And in closing, I'd like to say one of the quotes of Dr. Martin Luther King. It says, in the end, we will remember not the words of our enemies, but the silence of our friends.
Amen.
Mm-hmm. It's time for us to take our voices back, take our power back. So I look forward to you joining me again next Tuesday for another Hot Topics from the Soul. And don't forget to pass the show along to friends, family members, and also to your children, because they need to be enlightened of the fact that we are heirs of the inheritance. Good night.
Good night.
Good night.